Good afternoon and welcome to Open Air, KLW's weekly radio magazine of the performing arts. I'm your host, David LaTulipe. Today I'll be talking with choreographer-performer Kathleen Hermsdorf about San Francisco's 11th annual Fresh Festival of Experimental Dance, Music, and Performance, held over these next 3 weekends at the Joe Good Annex in San Francisco, featuring 3 weeks of cutting-edge live art, immersive training in dance, and other related forms and community-cultivating social and interactive events. From the Berklee Community Chorus and Orchestra, I'll visit with music director Ming Luke about the ensemble's upcoming free concerts this weekend at Hertz Hall on the UC Berklee campus. On the program, Franz Joseph Haydn's Lord Nelson Mass and Mozart's Coronation Mass with the theme of Mass in Troubled Times. I'll also talk with clarinetist and composer Matt Engels and vocalist Ken Ueno about the 2020 San Francisco Tape Music Festival held this weekend at the Victoria Theater in San Francisco. Plus, Peter Robinson will review the films Little Women and The Two Popes and updates us on happenings with the Marin Philosophical Society and in the public library system. Stay with us. This weekend, America's only festival devoted to the performance of audio works projected in three-dimensional space, the San Francisco Tape Music Festival will feature 4 concerts of classic audio art and new fixed-media compositions by some 35 local and international composers. You'll hear members of the San Francisco Tape Music Collective, along with guest composers, shape the sound live over a surround system of 24 high-end loudspeakers with the audience seated in complete darkness, a unique opportunity to experience music forming literally, physically, audibly, all around you. The festival will also pay tribute to world jazz master of the beat scene, Ken Nordine, and pioneering Argentinian-American composer Mario Davidovsky, both of whom we lost last year, Ken in February at the age of 98, and Davidovsky last August at the age of 85. Something to be said for having music in your life for longevity, I'd say. Well, let's hear more details from my guests. Oakland musician Matt Engels is a composer, clarinetist, concert producer, and computer music programmer. He's the founder and co-director of SF Sound, a new music series, ensemble, and internet radio station devoted to new ideas and traditions of experimental music, performance art, live electronic music, Bay Area composition, and the various facets of contemporary improvisation, a group which, among other public events, is presenting the SF Tape Music Festival. Matt's music often incorporates elements of improvisation and extended clarinet techniques, some of which we'll hear live on the air today, and is heavily influenced by his long involvement in computer music. Matt is also well known for his various computer music software that he's created. Matt, welcome to Open Air.
Thanks. Nice to be here.
Of course. Ken Ueno is a composer, vocalist, sound artist who is currently a distinguished professor at UC Berklee. His music has been performed at such venues as Lincoln Center, the Kennedy Center, the Metropolitan Museum of Art, and all around the world. Ken's piece for the Hilliard Ensemble, Shiroi Ishii, was featured in their repertoire for over 10 years. Another work, Pharmacon, was championed by 8th Blackbird and was performed dozens of times. He was also a featured artist on the Other Minds Festival 17. In 2014, Francis Marie Huti and the Boston Modern Orchestra premiered his concerto for 2 bow cello and orchestra. We'll have to talk about that. And Guerrilla Opera premiered a run of his chamber opera, Gallo, to critical acclaim. Welcome to you, Ken.
Thanks for having me.
Did I say that right? Gallo or is it Gallo?
It's Gallo.
Gallo. Okay, yeah. Great. Matt, let's first get an overview of the festival offerings and participants, and then, Ken, maybe you can offer some deeper detail into your world premiere, which was commissioned by SF Sound that's being presented on Sunday and called Ghosts of Ancient Hurricanes. Matt.
Well, I think the easiest way to describe the festival for someone not familiar with it is cinema for the ear. And you can kind of think of it as like an IMAX theater for sound. Instead of something to look at, we turn all the lights off and we project the sound in three-dimensional space. And sometimes the sound is focused down into a really narrow screen of sound, and sometimes it's fully enveloping you. And it's rooted in the classical music tradition, but it's definitely modern and experimental, and it covers everything from just pure recordings of nature to spoken text to abstract electronic music.
Mm-hmm. There's also going to be some traditional contemporary music.
Yes, that's
chamber music.
Yeah, that's kind of a rare thing for us. So, as you mentioned, the festival is produced by our parent organization, SF Sound, which is also a contemporary chamber ensemble. And we've done this once before, but we thought we'd do it again this year and combine the acoustic performing group with the Tate Music Festival. So on Sunday night, we're doing a unique event performing pieces for acoustic instruments and surround sound electronics tape.
Mm-hmm. Some familiar names that Bay Area listeners especially will have some familiarity with, such as Pauline Oliveros, Maggie Payne on that first concert on Friday. And then, of course, we're hearing some people from around the world. How were these participants selected for the festival?
We have an open call for submissions, which is usually about a third to a half of what we program. And then we curate the remaining portion of the festival. There's a collective of us, six or seven composers, and we often write pieces ourselves for that.
Mm-hmm. Now, this is called the SF Tape Music Festival. Now, I'm sure there's going to be a degree of audience that has never seen a magnetic tape or know what it's all about. And yet the early pioneers of this music, I'm thinking also of a contemporary, a friend of mine back in New York, Noah Krashevsky, literally was physically cutting pieces of tape to make their compositions.
Yeah, that's right. No one's really using tape anymore. It's almost all done on computer, and we perform all the pieces from a computer. But we are presenting some classic pieces that were made on tape, and in fact, we're also playing a piece by Pierre Schaeffer, a piece that was made all on turntables before there was even magnetic tape available.
Also probably as familiar to some of our audience members as a rotary dial telephone or a Model T. Ken, let's talk a little bit about the way you compose and where I understand you trained with Mario Davidovsky for a while.
He was one of my teachers at Harvard, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And where were you at compositionally back then versus where you are now?
That was a long time ago.
You hold it well.
I was a doctorate student at the time, and that was my first year of the doctorate.
Uh-huh.
And so many things has happened.
What sort of medium were you composing for and how back in your doctorate days?
Well, I was writing primarily for concert music, for orchestral music or chamber music for the concert stage. Since that time, I've performed myself more and made more of a feature of my own performances in my works as well as sound installations. And the most recent trajectory is seeing ways in which all three of those outputs might overlap. So site-specific works in which I'm making a sound installation that instrumentalizes a space and writing specifically for the acoustics of that space. And if there are instruments or instrumentalists they collaborate in that space, and I'm also performing in it. Yeah, and this new piece is an hour long, and I bring some of those features that I'm interested in more recently together. I am also performing in it. There's a cadenza for me and Matt. Matt's been one of my closest collaborators in the past 12 years that I've been in the Bay Area and live performances, so wanted to make a little space for that. Much of my music is what I call person-specific, being influenced by my great heroes like Jimi Hendrix and John Coltrane, where I feel like it really matters that it's them and it's not a cover band, and which is the opposite of my experience listening to classical music, in which the orchestra or the performers are transportable, right? Mm. And so honoring this more embodied, specific sensibility of person specificity coming from American musicians that I love, I'm part of my artistic mission is to try to transpose person specificity into classical music. And we have a great opportunity. Well, I had this great opportunity with SF Sound, and not only being able to write a featured cadenza for myself and Matt, you know, a musician I trust, been collaborating with many years, but there are also members of the ensemble who I've also worked with before, and they also have their own what I call superpowers, you know. Part of their superpowers is the wind ensemble. They can all circular breathe, and that's an important aspect of the eminence of the physicality.
I've tried and failed so many times to get circular breathing.
You know.
For people that don't understand what that is, it says a woodwind player can both inhale and exhale at the same time, where they're holding air in their mouth, and there's somehow it's still a mystery to me how it's done.
Yeah, but Matt's a master of that too. So there's a particular minute where it's just him holding an A flat.
Wow.
And
maybe we can have a private lesson sometimes.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. So, but then there's also some special instruments like Diane, the flute player. She has a glissando head joint.
Diane Gruby, yeah.
There's this extension on the flute that allows for microtones that Robert Dick, the great virtuoso, invented.
Sure.
And the trumpet player has a slide trumpet, which is kind of like a small trombone, if you will, you know, in the trumpet range that allows. So these instruments also facilitate microtones that I'm interested in. The tape aspect of the piece is inspired by nature. Last year, I was living in Hong Kong for the year, and I experienced Typhoon Mangkhut, which is one of the most devastating typhoons ever to hit Hong Kong. And I recorded some of those sounds in my apartment at the time. And so the beginning of the piece is a kind of way to maybe transpose the physical trauma of a natural event, weather event in one place, and transpose it into another space, if you will.
And this work of yours called Ghosts of Ancient Hurricanes, you mentioned one of the hurricanes.
Yeah.
This is for 6 winds, percussion, throat singer, 8 megaphones, microtonal metal pipes, and 4-channel tape. You very kindly are going to offer an excerpt from this work, just the two of you. But before we do, talk a little bit about the extended techniques as a singer that you're using. And then, Matt, maybe before we hear you, you can talk about the techniques that you'll be using in this improvisation portion of the work.
Yeah, extended techniques, maybe for some people who might not be as familiar, are, shall we say, a set of techniques that stand outside of the kind of normative practice, especially classical singing, for example. And my vocal practice makes a feature of those things that most regular singers don't do. For example, singing more than one sound at a time. I can demonstrate some of these sounds, and also different range things. For example,
different from like tuba and throat singing.
There's a bunch of different things. For example, like subtone singing, which is more like heavy metal singing. Like for example, there's also things throat singing, which more people who are interested in world music might be familiar with. And overtone singing, which is a different range. It's actually a different technique, not using the throat, but more in the palate. But then I've been inspired by different kinds of music around the world, and also things like heavy metal and like that to expand what I could do with my voice, but I've also invented some things, and some of the things I like to also do is sing thicker band multiphonics, which is different from overtone, where you have a fundamental and upper sounds, but these sounds are more like... And there are also some techniques that I use the megaphone specifically for that I could do.
Which you brought into studio here?
Yes. Prepare. There's some like clicking sounds, and I could shape the inside of my mouth with a particular kind of vowel-like shape to get specific feedback pitches, of which I could also sing along with. And then I could also, well, some of these sounds also I can also circular breathe with.
Yeah. Great. And let's turn to Matt first, next with some of the techniques in clarinet that will be used that may not ordinarily be heard in the concert hall.
Well, there's just a variety of, I'll just sort of generalize, just a variety of techniques that you're using with your fingers and your mouth and your tongue. But I just wanted to point out that, it's kind of weird that we're playing acoustically here, trying to promote an electronic music festival. But what's interesting is that it's really combining all of this now that, composers of music are exploring the possibilities of sound. And I think maybe traditionally it's been more in the electronic realm, but now there's a lot more happening with acoustic instruments, and it's really feeling like it's a culmination, and that's what we're trying to do on the festival, especially on the Sunday night show.
Great. Well, let's hear a little excerpt of obviously in abbreviated form, both in personnel and with the types of sounds that we're going to be hearing. This is Ken Ueno on vocal techniques and Matt Ingles on clarinet. An excerpt from... Ken's new piece. Wow, do not adjust your dial. That was a live performance here in Studio A of KLW for Open Air, and a little prelude of what you might hear at the San Francisco Tape Music Festival this weekend. It was Ken Ueno using a megaphone and distorting his voice in various ways, and with a traditional clarinet that you would not hear traditionally, Matt Ingles. And an excerpt from Ken's work, Ghosts of Ancient Hurricanes, a 2019 world premiere commissioned by SF Sound. That'll be heard on Sunday evening at 7. Quite a variety of, and an A-list of Bay Area musicians that are involved in this performance, including, as I mentioned, my friend Diane Gruby on playing flutes, Kyle Brookman, oboe and English horn. Matt, you're playing, I guess, on almost every piece you mentioned.
Yeah.
So it'll be quite an experience, as well as a tribute to the late greats, Mario Davidovsky, who I mentioned just passed away recently this past year, and Ken Nordine, fascinating guy that I've heard before, but now I'm starting to rediscover. Ken Nordine, kind of a beat poet, not word jazz musician. What else do you know about Ken?
Well, it's more... you know, it's a little bit outside of what we normally perform. But as when he passed away last year, we were all talking about it. And it turns out all of us were really inspired by his syndicated show, Word Jazz. Mm. And we were like, oh, yeah, I've got cassette copies I tape every Sunday night off the radio. And
wow.
And it's, we're just – unfortunately, we only had a slot for one small piece on the festival on Saturday. But I'm glad we were able to – put that in there.
And that'll be TikTok Fugue. And it's nice because I bet you're going to introduce a whole new audience to Ken's music, as well as tremendous other composers that you'll hear throughout the weekend. sfsound.org/tape for more information. Let's go out with a little taste of Ken Nordine. Ken, Matt, thanks for coming in. And
thank you very much. Great for having us.
Have a great festival. This is Ken Nordine's Adult Kindergarten.
We get together like this every weekend. That fellow playing the carpet there, you know, the shh sound, he's running for mayor. And the a girl playing the Venetian blinds there, she models hands. Great on gloves. Yeah, it's beginning to cook now. Oh, that ch-ch-ch sound there, that's an OB man. Fine man. And the other guy is just about ready to play the table over there. Live wire salesman for a plastic awning company. Never misses a session. Oh, that fellow, you never know it. The guitar piano. It's his kids. He, you know, steals it. Used to be an athletic. Great for his hands. Yeah, oh, that fellow on the wastebasket over there. He used to be a catcher for one of the big clubs, but he sprained his little finger. Yeah, it's really beginning to cook. You ought to try it at your house. So you're an amateur. Everyone's an amateur. No one lives long enough to be anything but an amateur. Excuse me, I have to find something to play. I want to join in.
A brief tribute to Ken Nordine as part of the SF Tape Music Festival this weekend. A link at our website, sfsound.org/tape. That'll be at the open air link. An amazing lineup. Something for everyone, no doubt. And you'll be really immersed in a three-dimensional soundscape at the Victoria Theater, sfsound.org/tape. Still to come, Peter Robinson will be reviewing a couple of movies for us, Two Popes and Little Women, and talking about the happenings of the Marin Philosophical Society and what's going on in our libraries these days. Also, Ming Luke will be here to talk about the Brooklyn, that's my former hometown, the Berklee Community Chorus and Orchestra's concerts of Mass in Troubled Time. We'll hear about that shortly. Well, the Fresh Festival of Experimental Dance, Music, and Performance features 3 weekends of performances, 3 weeks and weekends of practices, and 7 and more exchanges, accessible and inclusive community events. The 21-day festival offers quite a diverse feast of art, action, and interaction, showcasing new and reactivated creative research, work, and ideas in dance, music, and performance. Kathleen Hermsdorf, with me here once again, is an international dance artist, educator, and producer based in San Francisco. She directs the group Alternativa with musician Albert Mathias. She's been dancing in the Bay Area since 1991 and teaches, performs, improvises, creates, and curates around the world, including she's the director of Porch Summer Music School, summer school at Ponderosa in Stolzenhagen, Germany, and Wild, the West Cork Contemporary Dance Festival, and I love this place, Ballydehob, Ireland. Kathleen, welcome back to Open Air.
Nice to be here again.
And thanks for being with us. We both have been experiencing some aches and pains and trials and tribulations lately, and I'm very happy that you took the time to come in today.
Yeah, it is a pleasure.
If you could first give us a brief overview of the festival, and then we can focus in on your contribution with Alternativa.
The festival is 3 weeks of experimental dance, music, and performance. A little less music this year than before, because my art partner, musician Albert Mathias, who was supposed to be here with us today, was in a car accident. He's fine, but he had to go home.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
I know. Talk about all these...
Timing. Yeah.
So, overall, the festival is about cultivating new work from local artists or people that used to live here. It is national and international, but we try to keep the focus on the Bay Area. So anyone who comes from Europe or the East Coast usually has some relationship to the city or the Bay Area. They lived here for a while. They have family here. They have reasons to come. So it's a fully curated festival. I work with Jose Navarrete of Naka Dance Theater, based in Oakland, and he helps me come up with the lineup. Joe Good Annex is our home. They co-sponsor it. And our exchanges, which are the community events, are being held at Brava Theater Center this year in the Cabaret and Studio. So that's a new space for us, and it's always great with these community events to try a different place each year and make some new friends. So we opened the practices starting this week. We had our first exchange last night with Regina Evans and Nicia DeLovely doing poetry, reclaiming the black female womb. So the range from that to sort of abstract modern contemporary dance to club music. We have some teens making a piece about bullying, which I think is the sweetest thing.
Fantastic.
Yeah. So that's a bit of the range.
Mm-hmm. And there seems to be such a thirst for dance here in the Bay Area, and you must find audiences that are just drinking this up.
I believe so. I mean, I think that the experimental wing of maybe most art forms is a little bit maybe not universally attended, but this does seem to draw people, telling their friends, cross-pollinating different communities of musicians and actors and poets and dancers. So I'm really impressed with our, you know, who comes to the shows and who they bring to the shows.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And this is the 11th annual Fresh Festival. Congratulations on 11 years. That's fantastic.
Thank you. And thanks to the Reynon Foundation and the Zellerbach Family Foundation as well. You know, you need the funding, and they've been really supportive of committing over time so the festival could grow, which is really important.
Your music director and a longtime collaborator for Alternativa is Albert Mathias. How did you guys first meet?
We met in a group called Contraband, directed by Sarah Shelton Mann, been a company that's been in the Bay Area since the 80s. Albert and I both came from outside Chicago. I guess we arrived here around the same time, early 90s. And in the group, there was a live band and a dance group. And so all the musicians had to dance, all the dancers had to play music. We'd write songs and sing them together. And he and I met in there in our early 20s. And he was a trap player.
Mm-hmm.
He's since shifted into much more computer-oriented, but he, when I was first playing with him, we would carry the whole set everywhere we went.
You were his roadie.
All the hardware.
Built-in roadie.
I was. Yeah.
Well, he recently relocated to Mexico, as you mentioned. That's either going to make for some difficult collaborations or some fun escapes for you down south.
Yeah, he's in Mazatlan now, which is a place where we have gone many times to teach. There's a lovely company called Delfos, quite famous, and they have a school there as well. So we would go teach there every winter. Actually, now when we do Fresh is when we used to go there. So he had an opportunity to live two blocks from the beach in a nice two-bedroom apartment for $200-something. And, you know, what happens to a lot of people in San Francisco is, like, you can afford it, and then all of a sudden you really can't. And
right.
It's almost like you can't afford one more day.
Yeah.
You know, so... That kind of hit, but it's a beautiful life down there, and we're going to take Fresh down there, I think, in the next few years. We might take a little break in San Francisco after 11 years and try to shake it up a bit.
Sure.
Yep.
Uh-huh. And so tell me about your specific work that Alternativa is going to be doing as part of the festival.
Well, it's a little up in the air now since he went back to Mexico. But our plan was, we teach every week. So we have 3 weeks of training, and we teach every morning. We have a class that we've been teaching for 20 years. And then the performance piece we were going to do, which I'm not sure if I'll do alone, was called Tender in the Night. Tender is the Night. And based a bit on the book by Fitzgerald, a bit on the poem by Yeats. And it is dealing with kind of middle age artists. It's dealing with mental illness, things that I'm not necessarily dealing with personally, but things around my life.
Sure.
And beautiful writing, melancholy. And I wanted to have an opportunity to not, a lot of times Albert plays really big music and I do really big movement, and I wanted to play a bit more theatrically with dark and light and skin. And I really want a whole stage full of like black curtains that you can just slide around. But I have yet to find that set waiting for me, yeah.
Well, we do have a little bit of Albert's music that we're going to share, Polyfragmented. What will we see on the stage when we're hearing this particular music?
I have no idea.
It's still...
We're very improvisational.
Improvisational, all right.
Very instinctual.
How many people will we see? Is that even known at this point?
Oh, it'll be me.
Oh, okay.
It would have been me and him, and now if it's anyone, it will be me.
All right, let's hear a bit of Polyfragmented, music of Albert Matthias, and that's going to be heard as part of Fresh Festival 2020, at a festival of experimental dance, music, and performance that takes place now through the 26th of January. Something for everyone, and a chance to participate as well. Go to freshfestival.org for more information. We have a link to this festival at our website as well, at the open air page. Kathleen, great to see you again. Heal well. I'll try to do the same, and we'll see you again soon.
See you on the dance floor.
Music of Albert Matthias you'll hear as part of the collaboration with Kathleen Hermsdorf and Fresh Festival 2020, freshfestival.org for more information. I'm David LaTulipe. Welcome to Open Air. I hope you're enjoying the broadcast. Shortly, we'll be talking with Peter Robinson about a couple of movie reviews and what's happening in Marin for their Philosophical Society and what's happening in your branch of the local public library. But next, it's a pleasure to welcome back conductor Ming Luke, whose work I've admired for some years now. Some of his career highlights include conducting the Bolshoi Ballet Orchestra in Moscow, performances of Romeo and Juliet and Cinderella at the Kennedy Center. His English debut was at Sadler's Wells with Birmingham Royal, conducting Dvorak's Requiem in Dvorak Hall in Prague, recording scores for a Francis Ford Coppola film, and well over 100 performances at the San Francisco War Memorial with the San Francisco Ballet, which once again included performances of The Nutcracker, which Ming also conducted in December in Nashville. Goodness gracious. Ming has been recognized internationally for his work with music education and has designed and conducted education concerts and programs with organizations such as the Berkeley Symphony, Houston Symphony, Sacramento Symphony, and others. Ming, welcome back.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Of course. I mentioned that you conducted performances in December of Nutcracker, both here and in Nashville.
Yeah, it was back and forth quite a bit because Nashville has performances on the weekends and San Francisco is more concentrated, so they had performances throughout the week. So I'd fly back to Nashville on the weekends, come back to San Francisco during the week. And I think I had 22 in total this year.
Mm-hmm. Well, as our audiences know, the San Francisco Nutcracker is San Francisco focused and based, thanks to Helgi Thomason's Thomason's vision some years ago. What's the Nashville setting?
Oh, it's exactly local to them, too. And so they base it out of the World Fair in, I think, 1879 or so.
That was held
in Nashville, and so it's very specific to Nashville. But this year was actually a very special year for San Francisco Ballet because it was the 75th anniversary of the first performance of that. And as you probably know, San Francisco Ballet was the one that started the whole Nutcracker tradition during the holidays in the U.S., and so it was a big anniversary for them.
Nice. And you're doing regular work with the Nashville then?
Yeah, in Nashville, we just finished Romeo and Juliet, in fact, in the fall.
Prokofiev?
Prokofiev.
One of my favorite
absolutely
scores.
Fantastic. And then in the spring, we have a fantastic new work by the artistic director there, Paul Vasterling, that's based off of Max Richter's Four Seasons, which is based off of course, of Vivaldi's Four Seasons, but only has about 30% of the music.
And the rest is
Max Richter's. It's great.
Great piece. So let's drill down on why you're here for the most part with the Berklee Community Chorus and Orchestra, which you've been leading for some time, a program called Mass for Troubled Times. Let's talk first about the Nelson Mass, which was originally called the Missa in Angustis, one of 14 Masses by Haydn, and has been called by his chief biographer, H.C. Robbins Landon, great musicologist, arguably Haydn's greatest single composition.
Yeah, it's a fantastic work. And, you know, Haydn was employed by the Esterházys for most of his entire life. And towards the end, when he had negotiated the ability to tour around and or Europe, and so he became very, very famous. And so towards the end of his life, he was very fulfilled, having a successful international career, but also having the stability with the Esterházys. And so he created six last masses, of which Lord Nelson Mass is one of them. Mm. He didn't give it the title Lord Nelson Mass. It was a mass, as you mentioned, in troubled times. And you can hear it immediately from the very beginning. The Kyrie is in D minor. It's very aggressive. It has a storm. Strong aspects to it.
Well, let's hear that rather dramatic opening of the Lord Nelson Mass, the Kyrie, and then we'll talk more about the background of the work. From the Mass for Troubled Times, later called the Nelson Mass, written in 1798, the Kyrie. Indeed, a terrifying time for Austria. Napoleon had won four major battles with Austria in less than a year. The previous year, early 1797, his armies had crossed the Alps and threatened Vienna itself. So Haydn is writing from experience. And to top it off, he was himself having some cutbacks, budget cutbacks,
exactly,
as a result of all this, right? And so the orchestration is very different.
Yeah, the entire woodwind section was conscripted into war, and so he didn't have any woodwinds from which to use for the mass. And in fact, we're going to be doing that version. And so, you know, later on, people have orchestrated the organ part to be the woodwinds that were missing, but we're going to do the original version, which has organ replacing all the woodwind instruments, except that he used a lot of these war instruments. Expanded brass section. You can hear the timpani. You can hear the brass from the very beginning of the Kyrie. And so it's a very, it has a lot more aggressive character than you'd normally expect from a mass.
Mm, so drama throughout. First documented performance, it became the Nelson Mass. Let's talk about that, why it became the Nelson Mass. Who was Lord Nelson exactly?
Well, Lord Nelson was the commander that actually defeated Napoleon. And so all of that angst that you had mentioned, once word got back that Lord Nelson had defeated Napoleon, was obviously a great boon to Austrians and to Haydn and Esterházys. But Lord Nelson actually visited the Esterházys, and they think that's where the name got attached to the Mass, because it was also performed performed at the same time.
Mm. So we have the connection to the theme Mass in Troubled Times quite explicitly with the Haydn Mass. Now, is the inclusion of the Mozart Coronation Mass on this theme concert just because we are now living in troubled times?
You know, it's interesting because both the Mozart and the Haydn have very interesting instrumentations. And so the Mozart also uses additional brass and timpani throughout the entire Mass. And so we decided to pair the two of them because of that. Mozart is actually at a very difficult time, whereas Haydn had a storied, wonderful international career. Mozart, of course, being the genius, was incredibly talented, but had a lot of difficulty maintaining employment. And so he was fired by the Archbishop of Salzburg, and the Archbishop disliked him so much that he had fired his father as well. And so Mozart went off to Paris, where his mother passed away, and he came basically groveling back to Archbishop to try to get a job, and eventually became the music director at the cathedral. And so this was one of the first pieces that was composed when he came back to employment, except that the Archbishop had asked that all masses be no longer than half an hour.
Hmm.
And so Mozart had this creative...
Reforms that were going on.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. And so Mozart had to be very creative in composing this work, but there are no violas. And there's an expanded brass section.
Do you really miss him?
Yeah, I have to say, they very much enjoy it when
they
get to the end of the rehearsal of the Haydn and Mozart's next, and they can go home early. So they do enjoy it.
Yeah. Following the Latin Mass format, again, abbreviated because of the reforms that were happening in Austria at the time of all sorts of musical reasons. The Berklee Community Chorus and Orchestra's concerts are this weekend. They are free concerts at Hertz Hall in Berklee on the campus of UC Berklee. We're going to hear what is probably the most recognizable portion of that Mass, the Exultate Jubilate, the Alleluia, from the Coronation Mass of Mozart. Ming, you've got so much else going on. I hope you take some time to visit us again and update us about what's happening with the Merced Symphony that you're music directing and what is going to come up for Nashville, and of course your work with the ballet, which you're going to be doing several, almost all of the performances as well, at least all
of
the ballets.
Yeah, exactly.
Fantastic. Thanks for coming in. Here's
a little
Mozart for you. Barbara Bonney singing that Mozart excerpt, the Alleluia, from the Coronation Mass with the English consort. Trevor Pinnock, music director. Ming Luke leads the Berklee Community Chorus and Orchestra. This weekend, concerts are Friday at 8, Saturday and Sunday at 3. Free concerts at Hertz Hall on the UC Berklee campus, bcco.org, for more information. Or there's a link at our website, kalw.org. Peter Robinson joins me now with a couple of movie reviews and what's happening in Marin at the Philosophical Society. Tell us, philosophically speaking, Peter, what's going on?
Well, there we go. Yes, Marin does have a Philosophical Society. It's a county of thinkers. And perhaps I should explain that they use the word in the broadest sense of philosophically could simply mean thinking about. And the way the society works, they meet on the third Monday of each month. It's a lunchtime meeting, and they attract a wide variety of really engaging speakers. Let me give a couple of examples of upcoming topics, since I think it gives you some idea as to what you would find if you came to the Maroon Philosophical Society. The first topic, and it's this month, is the whole concept of a just war. Is there such a thing as a just war? And I couldn't think of anything more timely, given the last 48 hours that we've experienced, and also listening just a few minutes back to that concept of music for troubled times. So Dr. Kavanagh, both a philosopher and also a practical, when I say a practical person who has both taught and counseled people at universities and other places, is going to explore what it means to actually think about the concept of a just war. As an example of the variety of the different things you may discover at these lunchtime meetings on a Monday, next is the distinguished British writer Tony Broadbent. He's been here on this station, expert on the Beatles, and he explores the question, is there a philosophy to the Beatles? And maybe 70 years after they first invaded the musical scene, what can we learn from them? So here's a good example of moving from philosophy to music. And then later in the series, we have a professor from Sonoma State, Terry Ebinger, and she raises the question of moral ambiguity in film noir. So if you remember all those great movies, Lauren Bacall, Humphrey Bogart, black and white, from the late 40s to the mid-50s, where already people are in a dilemma on the screen, but where does moral ambiguity come in? And I always think the fact they are in black and white, which means that you can fade to grey, you're exactly in that area. So if you enjoy talking about ideas, if you enjoy the concept of thinking about ideas, the Marin Philosophical Society meets the third Monday of each month. And the best way to find out about their events is to go to their website, marinphilosophicalsociety.com. They meet, obviously, in Marin at the McGuinness Club. It's a golf club on Smith Ranch Road, just off Highway 101. And it's a good opportunity to meet friends, discuss ideas, and perhaps be provoked at a time when it's very easy to be complacent and let things happen. This won't happen to you at the Marin Philosophical Society.
A society that questions everything except your intelligence, to borrow a phrase from Philosophy Talk here at KLW.
Yeah, and KLW does have an interesting program, which David just referenced to Philosophy Talk. Now, to move from active talking in groups, let's go to the silver screen. And I have two movie recommendations. Highly recommend both of them for different reasons. And the first is called The Two Popes. I bring the title up because in many ways this is not what I consider just a religious movie. It's about two old boys getting together and starting the process of personal forgiveness. The acting is absolutely superb. Tony Hopkins and Jonathan Pryce are in the lead. And from the beginning, you get engaged in changes in both the structure, the administration, and probably the theology of the Catholic Church. Now, that being said, I should add that this is fiction. So if you think you can learn history through movies, you're going to see a good movie, but it may not be exactly how things happened. And I think that's an interesting twist, because the whole story of a cardinal's resignation can actually be done by letter. You don't have to go to Rome, which is what the background of this story is. And the fact that Tony Hopkins in real life likes to play improv jazz is different to the Pope he plays, who played classical music on the piano. So already we're beginning to nitpick. But as a buddy movie, two people coming together with different philosophies about how the future, in this case of a great organization, the Catholic Church, should go, you will be intrigued. And I think what it does is leave you thinking about where is the spiritual center of your world and how does the silver screen bring that issue to the forefront. And it's less to do with who was right and who was wrong. It is a movie about great acting and, in my opinion, a worthwhile story. But it is, let me emphasize, a story.
Two Popes all can be seen on the big screen as well as through Netflix.
Now, my second choice, again, is a book which has been around for many, many years, and I'm talking about Little Women. And I have to confess that at school I found different reasons not to read it. But that is not to say don't go and see the film. I thought the film was absolutely intriguing, and I thought the cinematography, which takes us back to that immediate period in post-Civil War America, was totally authentic. And I think the other thing I took from the movie in terms of what I call the Me Too movement is this is a family coping where there is the absence of males in many senses because the father has been engaged in the American Civil War. And how these different family members, girls, come together, how they resolve the different issues from marriage to careers to what it would be like to live in New England in the 1860s. The book was first published in 1868, and then the second volume came out in 1869. And I think they've done an excellent job at taking the period, both from a costume point of view, from a setting point of view, and from a philosophical point of view, to give you the background on the story. And my favourite character in it was Meryl Streep. She plays Aunt March, grumpy but wise, and just the right sort of person to have in terms of common sense when possible tragedy looms.
And wonderful cast as well includes Emma Watson, Laura Dern, Timothy Chalamet, Bob Odenkirk as well. Chris Cooper's in it too. And we should also mention, of course, the direction by Greta Gerwig, who gives a woman's perspective to this very woman-focused film and story.
So it is essentially what I call a feel-good movie. There's many scenes at Christmas time as I sit around a fire in the living room. And I think as an audience, you feel that sense of welcome. Little Women opens up the world to how things were in a structured, if somewhat traditional, society, but where people cared about each other. And I came out of that movie feeling, whether it was to do with the institution of marriage or whether it was to do with being financially dependent on men or whether it was to do with love or matrimony or a career dream, all those major subjects are both explored and embraced. Highly recommended, the movie Little Women.
Based on Louisa May Alcott's story, of course, and the screenplay is by Greta Gerwig as well, as being directed by. So she did what worth catching, for sure.
So I just want to say a word as we go into 2020 about the value that libraries play both in my life and I hope in everybody else's life. And I say that because the changing role of the library has been something that has been going on now for the last 5 or 10 years. They go from being books to being electronic centres. They go from being reference centres. You get a lot of help from the reference desk at many of your local libraries. And at the same time, they put on, I consider to be, wonderful programmes.
Sure.
So let me just give a couple of examples. My local library is Sausalito. The librarian there, Abbott Chambers, does a wonderful job. Tomorrow, for example, they are running a movie on the Graham Greene novel, The Quiet American. And what they're doing is comparing two different movie versions. One was with Michael Caine in 2002, and then the other, which Greene did not like, was in 1958 with Michael Redgrave. So that's just one example. Now, if you go over to Tiburon, my adjacent other library, go there on a Wednesday, third Wednesday of the month, and what do you find? Afternoon tea. So just imagine, as an incentive to come in, sitting down with your cup of tea, cakes, sandwiches, and suddenly you say, but this is the library. And this is the type of things that libraries are doing as a major centre. And perhaps the best example that I'd like to finish with is during those power outages last 3 months in Marin, Sausalito Library had its own generators running. They invited people in. You could charge your computer. You could get a cup of coffee. You could get help. And I remember going in on that particular weekend. All floors were full. They cleared the chairs. People were sitting on carpets. And they were connected. And I think that's the key word for understanding what a library means in my life, and I hope in your life, being connected, being part of a community, reading a book, asking questions, and most important of all, finding answers.
Indeed, Peter. I need to give a shout out to my local public library, the San Francisco Public Library, which has a tremendous budget. They're very community conscious. All sorts of events going on there. And again, help however you need it, electronically or with a traditional book. A dear friend of mine said, well, you went to the library? Why do you go to the library? I just download things on Kindle. There's so much more than downloading a book on Kindle if you visit your local public library. So thank you for enlightening us, Peter.
And maybe just to finish, literacy programs is another key thing of all libraries. And as Mark Twain said it, the man who does not read has no advantage over the man who cannot read.
We will leave on that philosophical note. Thank you, Peter. Okay, we'll see you again soon. Well, in his final season as San Francisco Symphony Music Director, Michael Tilson Thomas returns to the composer who, more than any other, brought the San Francisco Symphony into the hearts of music lovers across the globe, Gustav Mahler. In this concert, tonight, tomorrow, Saturday, love's anguish finds its voice in Mahler's settings of the classic folk poems Des Knaben Wunderhorn. Michael Tilson Thomas also offers the world premiere of his latest composition, Meditations on Rilke, a six-part song cycle based on the lyric poems of Rilke, featuring Grammy Award-winning mezzo Sasha Cook, who is in residence this season with the symphony and will also be featured for the Violins of Hope concerts in a new work by Jake Heggie. We'll try to have them both on open air next week to talk about that and the beautiful setting that Jake wrote. Also, the gorgeously resonant and gorgeously gorgeous bass baritone Ryan McKinney on the program. Also on the program, in addition to Michael Tilson Thomas's premiere, as I mentioned, the songs from this Knaben Wunderhorn, Berlioz's Overture to Benvenuto Cellini, and Ravel's La Valse, an amazing showcase for this amazing orchestra. Let's go out on that 1-2-3 work of Ravel. I'm David LaTulipe. Thanks for listening to Open Air. Details at kalw.org, and for the symphony's concerts, sfsymphony.org. Thanks to Niels Swinkels for producing. Archived at kalw.org. If you've got a show suggestion, dash me an email, david@kalw.org. Thanks for listening. Hear the amazing La Valse by Maurice Ravel as part of the San Francisco Symphony's concerts tonight, tomorrow, and Saturday. sfsymphony.org for more information.